Makes a lot of fun. Good. Well, I'm going to start with something just to keep us going here. A salesman phones a house, and a little boy answers the phone. Hello? So the salesman says to the little boy, "Can I talk to your dad?" The little boy says, "No, my dad is at the back of the house with the police." "Can I talk to your mom?" "Well, could I talk to your older brother?" "No, he's at the other side of the house with a SWAT team." "Do you have an older sister?" "Yes, but she can't come to the phone. She's at the other side of the house with a fire department." The man says to the little boy, "Why are we whispering?" And the little boy said, "Because they're all looking for me." As I travel, every church I talk to is looking for new ideas. They're looking for me. They want that one idea that's going to help them go to the next level, be more effective, be more efficient. So this is what this is about. It's about sparking imagination is what I call this. Let's see. There we go. And I use the word idea. I love acrostics. And so the idea of ideas, that a church that's creative, a church that's open to new ideas, starts with innovation is sought by the leaders. The people at the top welcome ideas. Second, discussion and brainstorming. They realize that no one person has all the new ideas, that we can do it collectively. We're going to talk about that in a moment. An environment of creativity where the church itself is known for welcoming new ideas, celebrating. Adaptive people, people that are willing to experiment and try things that leave the comfort zone for something. And finally, success-oriented in the sense that they're focused on mission, that the bottom line is what God wants, and that they're mission-driven churches, mission-driven people. So here are some things that I trust the country I see that are creative. Here is a quote by Andrew Papageorge, strategic and innovation consultant. "Innovation is not absolutely necessary, but neither is survival." Okay, you didn't like that one. I'll try this one. U.S. General said this: "If you don't like change, you're going to like irrelevance even less." Okay, here is a church in Steinbach, Manitoba. Steinbach, Manitoba. Okay, the center of all life. Center of the universe. And Steinbach, Manitoba, it's a church of 2,500 people in Steinbach, Manitoba. And this is a church that's full of innovation. And this is when Dancing with the Stars was in. They had a Christian couple that taught dancing, and that's one of the things they did for an outreach. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just telling you they did it. 2,500 people in Steinbach, Manitoba. Here's another. Calgary, Alberta. A friend of mine that I mentored. Ancient spirituality Bible study. But he did a flyer because that's what people were thinking. Okay, another one. Christianity version 2.0. Okay. Let's try another. I keep trying. The biggest lies in history. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. They have a saying in Ottawa. What happens in Ottawa stays on YouTube. Here is Peter Drucker, the business guru, made this statement about creativity. I think it's very important. In the managerial organization, the top people sit in judgment. But in the innovative organization, it is their job to encourage ideas, no matter how unripe or crude. Very key. How many of you, by show of hands, want to be part of something that is just managerial? How many want to be something creative? That's right. Right, we want to see what God is doing, and God is a God of creativity. Okay, here is a statement. Okay? The normal reaction of most of us to a new idea is, and I want you to remember what we did yesterday, A and B. We're going to do that for the next while, because I'm your siesta speaker today. So I'm going to ask you to get with somebody else, and I want you to talk and come up with the answer. What do you think? And the one with the most creative answer gets a prize of something or other. We'll think of it between now and then. The normal reaction to most of us to a new idea is, go ahead, go with somebody, go get up, stand up, if you had to, stand up for Jesus, there you go. Find somebody, go and say, I'm A, you're B, and talk to them. Finish the sentence. The normal reaction of most of us to a new idea is,
smile and nod.
Smile and nod. Okay, how about over here?
What a terrible idea.
What a terrible idea. Okay, at the back. Somebody at the back. What's that?
Defensive.
Here, why would you think of that? Yes. Listen. Okay, listen.
Yes, but.
Oh, that's actually very good. That's right. The road to hell is mostly on our butts, yeah. So what is, in real life, what is a normal reaction of us to a normal idea, to a new idea? Come on, a few more. What's that? Apprehension. Okay, you should be on my board. Someday. Oh, I love that. That was very clever. That was a little put in there, hey. Someday. Not in my lifetime, but someday. Oh, very good. You've been on boards before. What's that?
Saying
no. Very good. Yes.
It'll never work.
There's a good one. Anyone else? Never done it this way before. What's that? We tried it before and it didn't work in 49. It won't work now. Oh, boy. Yes. Pass me the Geritol. Okay. Wow. Finished? You realize that this is not popular. The idea of innovation is immediately uphill. Just notice. But let me also tell you this. Do you remember when you were little kids in kindergarten, they taught you had to color? And now that you are in the 21st century, you learn that people succeed when they color? That's right. Outside, all the people that today that are making multiple millions on Google and so on are people that learn to color outside the lines. Scott Beck, who started Blockbuster Video, was asked, what does it take to launch a new venture? And he said this. A critical mass of one person with a vision and one fresh idea. All it takes today to make is a one fresh idea. But the church isn't famous, is it, for being coloring outside the lines. I love the story, one of my favorites, of an old Anglican bishop that had a dream. And this old bishop in his dream, this good man, dreamt that he was preaching to his congregation. And he woke up, and he was. He went to sleep in the middle of his own sermon. Can you imagine? We're not famous for innovation. Now, I'm just going to briefly give you a background of my story. I was 18 years old when somebody invited me to go and see an illusionist called Andre Cole, who was acting in a Baptist church on a Thursday night in Buenos Aires, Argentina. I never went to church. And this friend invited me. The invitation said worth $5, and it was free. My name's McFarlane. Scottish, we like free. It's rather like Mennonite. We like free. So I went to this thing, heard the gospel for the first time, but I never would have gone had it been a regular church service. So here are a number of things that attracted me, and some of them still work. A creative event, a friend, everything is about relationships, by the way. Invitation, it had value, it was done with excellence. The gospel was clearly presented, because I'd never heard the gospel before. And they asked us to respond to the gospel, and it made a huge difference to me. I was in Huntington, West Virginia, speaking at a big men's conference, and lots of people came to Christ because I'm an evangelist. And one man came up to me in tears after and said to me, thank you, David, for telling me the gospel. He said, I live next to two Christian families, and I always envied what they had. I wondered sometimes if what they had was connected to their faith in some way. I wasn't sure. But they seemed to have, how they acted when they lost their job and how they brought up their kids. And I wondered if it was connected to the fact that occasionally I'd see them going to church with a Bible. So I went to the one guy when he was mowing the lawn. I said, do you ever talk about God? And the guy said, sure. And he kept on walking. Went to the other side and I saw the guy and I said, do you have a spiritual family? And the guy said, sure. And he kept on walking. And he said, thank you for telling me this morning exactly how I could know Christ. At some point in time, we need to know how to tell the gospel when the time is right, because there are people out there. So these are creative things. That's why I like creative things, because that's how I ended up coming to Christ. Okay, let me give you an example, biblical example of creativity. I think this one's one of my favorite. Everything's my favorite. Acts 9:24. Day and night they kept watch. That's the people who hated Paul. Day and night they kept close watch on the city gates in order to kill him. There's a contract out on his life. But his followers took him by night and lured him in a basket through an opening in the wall. They couldn't get him out the normal way, the road, through the gates. So they put him in a basket and they lured him through an opening in the wall. If he were in some Canadian churches today, he would be dead. We don't do baskets. Later in Corinthians, he makes a comment about it. He talks about, but I was lured in a basket from a window in the wall and slipped through their hands. You know, they couldn't do it one way, so they said, how else can we do it? That's what creative's about. We can't do it this way. How else can we do it? There's an old joke, and it's really old, and I'm still going to tell it to you, of a couple that had twins, and the two twins, one was an optimist, one was a pessimist, grew up in the same home. One saw everything is great and wonderful and fantastic. The other one was always, it's terrible, it's going to rain, we're going to lose it, it's going to break. So they took them to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, can I observe them for an hour? So he put the kid that was the optimist in a room full of nothing but a pile of horse manure. Then he took the kid that was a pessimist, put him in a room full of nice toys, and they observed them. After an hour, he went to the kid that was a pessimist, and the kid was sitting in the corner, hadn't touched any of the toys. He said, they asked him, why did you do this? He said, because it's a trap. Because they're going to break. So I played it safe. I did nothing. He sat in the corner. They go to the kid that's the optimist, and he's there digging in the horse manure, digging in it with his hands, covered in horse manure. They say, what are you doing? And he said, with all this here, there's got to be a horse here somewhere. And I love that story because I actually think that way. Every time there's manure, okay, but there's got to be a reason for it. There's got to be a solution here. There's got to be something we haven't tried here that can make it happen. There's got to be a horse here somewhere. I literally think that way. Let me just do this with you. So let's do it with Charlie. You have a penny, and no, you don't have to get one. And I have a penny. So I give you my penny, and you give me your penny. How many pennies have you got? One. But if I have an idea, and you have an idea, I give you my idea and you give me your idea, how many ideas do you have? There you go. We share ideas. We enrich everyone. So how do we do this? Well, there are creative people. How many of you are creative people? Some of you are, okay? How many of you have not a creative bone in your body? The whole point is that we don't have to all be creative. That there are creative processes. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to take you through a number of them with the idea that I'm leaving you with something that will be a tool that you can use to re-energize a Sunday school, a home group, anything that you're doing, some mission that you're doing, whatever it is. I call it idea blasting. My background's in marketing. That's what my degrees are in. And I was in charge of marketing for American Express, for Canada, for their tour division. So ideas is part of my life. So this is what I discovered in ministry, and this is how I do it. So this is it. Number one, we need to, before we can come a creative process, we need to, number one, define the problem. Then we're going to collect the ideas. Then we're simply going to implement the solution. Sounds really simple, doesn't it? If it was that simple. Anyway, so how do we start? You start with number one. You decide that you're going to get a team together to come up with an idea to solve some problem. I would suggest you make it a small team, no more than six people. I suggest that you get people involved that are connected with the issue so that you have the facts. But I also think you should maybe put a couple of people in that think differently than you do, have a different perspective. So get six people together. Six, doesn't have to be six, but that's a suggestion. Then I suggest that you pray. How about that? Because we want to hear from God. God is a creative God. He created giraffes. And he created you. And then number three, we have to define the problem. This is probably the most difficult thing. I think it was Einstein who said, defining the problem is half the solution. So what is it that we're trying to solve? You heard me tell a little while ago about our church in Chilliwack not being friendly enough, and I just tried to make them friendlier, and I realized that I was trying to solve the wrong problem. It was friendship that was the issue. So what is the problem you're trying to solve? What is it? Put it down, if you can, in one sentence. This takes a lot of work. You should do this before you have the meeting. And you should be able to put it on a whiteboard. This is what we're trying to solve. This is the issue. There's an old story of a truck that went through an underpass and hit the underpass. And so they called the engineers in, and the engineers were talking about how they had to maybe jack up the bridge a few inches to get the truck through, until a little boy came along and said, if you let a little bit of air out of all the tires, I think it'll work. We need to look at the problems and define them properly, because the solution is half in defining what the problem. Problem wasn't that the bridge was too low, the truck was too high. Matter of perspective, but sometimes that's all the issue that you have. Okay, so then you have a problem, okay? Then you talk about the significance. Why is it important to solve this problem? Nobody wants to waste their time. But if you solve this problem, maybe we could reach 10 children for Christ, for example. So this has got a big meaning. And then you tell them, okay, the six of you, nobody is allowed to judge any of the new ideas in the next half hour. You're not allowed to judge. If you say, what was your line?
Never tried, didn't work,
we throw you out the window. Okay? If you say any of the things that you guys said earlier, you're not allowed to say that. You're not allowed to roll your eyes. You're not allowed to nudge anybody. You're not allowed to flare your nostrils. You're not allowed to do any judging. If you can't do that, don't come to the meeting. We don't want you. Because this is what stops new ideas. Judging is what stops the flow of ideas. So the moment you've got to get them out of the room. And if you're going to throw them out of a window, make sure you're in the second story. So once you've done that, then you say, okay, I'd like you in the next 10 minutes to give me 40 ideas. 40. Don't say one idea, because what we normally do with ideas is we throw out one little idea, we pounce on it, pull it to pieces, and then nobody wants to give another idea. Making sense? I don't want two ideas from. I want 40 ideas. They won't come up with 40 ideas. They probably come up with 20. But you want them to see that you want lots of ideas. And you can do it where they write them on a card or sticky stuff that you can put on the wall. You could do it on a whiteboard, right? You can do it any way you want to collect the ideas. Sticky thing isn't a bad idea. Whatever's Post-it notes. Okay. Post-it notes. So you get everybody feverishly writing all these crazy ideas, and then you stick them all on the wall, and then you evaluate them. You find that a bunch of the ideas are similar. You find, and this is what's really brilliant, sometimes your idea with your idea end up creating a third idea that neither of you thought of. But you're richer because, hey, I thought of that part, but you thought of that. Hey, this is a brand new idea. And it's really exciting process. You can come up with really clever ideas. And of course, there'll be a few weird stuff up there. Okay? That's okay. That's fine. So when you finish, you'll have two or three things that you've done. And by the way, finish on time. Meetings should never be longer than they need to be. Including this one. Because after a while, if you keep on with the creative people, you bog down and it becomes very depressing. Okay. You haven't been around creative people. Okay. Finish on time. Then you simply implement them. The best way to implement them, in my view, is to do trial runs. I'm very big on trial runs. We're going to try this. We don't know if it's going to work. We've been praying about it. We're going to try it for 3 months. I've done multiple services in every church I've led. I pastored 4 churches. Every one of them we took from one to the last church I pastored had 4 identical services in a weekend. Well, the first time you're doing it, there's more resistance than you ever thought possible. No, you thought, didn't you? So you do it as a trial run. You say, we're going to try it. We're trying to make seats available for people who need to know Christ. That's our mission. We're going to offer this. It's a sacrifice for all of us to try it. But we'll do it for 3 months and evaluate. And every time we've done it so far, we've done it. The church is filled up with people, and it's been so exciting, nobody wants to stop. Okay, you don't have to do that. Okay, And then you celebrate the ideas and give credit to whoever came up with the idea. Give credit. Okay, don't take the credit yourself. This is the same thing written in writing form. Okay, any comments on that? Very simple idea process. Called idea blasting. You can do it. You can do it in business, by the way. I had one guy said to me, that's a great idea for my corporation. I said, use it. That's right. This works. Isn't that exciting? Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. You know what? I think I'll show you a system for doing that. It's called six-hat thinking. This is another very clever... I'm giving you process. These are tools I'm giving you that you can use in different contexts. This is a clever idea. It's from a creative book called Creative Thinking by De Bono. And it's for evaluating ideas. And it's a very clever idea, way of doing it. You can do this. The whole concept is you create a group of four people. Four people. Now, you can do it with four people, or you can do it with 5,000 people, as long as they're all in groups of four. Okay? And so what you do is you put up on the board your idea, the one that you came up with, that idea you thought was the best thing since sliced bread. You put that idea on. This is a problem we were trying to solve, and this is how we think we can solve it. This is a proposal. So then you say to the four around the table, one of you will be a scribe. You will write down the answers. Okay? So one of you will be a scribe. And we're going to wear six different hats. You can actually, if you want to, have six different hats of all these colors if you choose to. You don't have to. So the first thing you say is, we're going to ask everybody at the table, all four of you, to wear a yellow hat for the next 5 minutes. The yellow hat means you can only give the benefits you see to the new idea. What are the positive things that will come out of this idea? Every one of you has to speak. You have to say one positive thing. And you have less than a minute to say it. That's why it takes only 5 minutes. So you will say that it's going to allow more people to come to church. You will say that it'll, I don't know, whatever it is. You know, I'll give more options, whatever it is. So you give the benefits. When that's finished, you say, okay, take the yellow hats off. Now we want everyone to wear the black hats. And so for the next 5 minutes, we want each of you to contribute at least one thing on what are the cautions, what are the concerns, what are the potential problems that you see from this. So everybody writes down. Everyone says something. Then you get them, take off the black hats, put on the green hats. What new ideas, what augmentation of this idea do you see? Do you see something better that we could do than this solution we're giving you? Everybody contributes. Then you say, okay, we take off that hat, put on the white hat. What information is needing? Are there any missing gaps in terms of data that are needed? Or can we move forward with this? Then you give them, you say, blue hats. What are controls, systems, structures for implementation? How can we effectively roll this thing out? So everybody contributes. You know, we don't have to do very much. We've already got the worship team. They're willing to sing twice, whatever. And then finally, the red hat, which you've all been waiting for, which is the emotional reaction. What is your gut feeling? You have to do it in the order I'm giving it to you. Most churches make the big mistake. They put the gut at the top. And once you've given out your emotions, nobody dares challenge you and you've killed the whole religion. You can't go anywhere with the conversation. This is very helpful. This is a tool you will have for the rest of your natural lifetime. Any comments?
Very helpful.
Good. That was the idea. My whole goal is to be helpful. Okay. So, here is a church in Surrey who showed Spy Kids 3D, this is a couple of years ago, free, includes popcorn and drink. Note, the kids need to be accompanied by adults, big screen, big sound, it's free. And 1,000 people showed up, church of about 300, 1,000 people showed up for the showing of this movie in the church. I think they did it in a hall, but anyway. Now, here's the kicker. The next Sunday, 100 children showed up in church with their families that had never been to the church before. Okay, now I want feedback. Why did it happen? Why was this a success? What do you think they did? They said, bring kids too, right? Good. No, they didn't. No, they did not show. No, sorry about that. Okay. I'm slow. I didn't catch it. Okay, no, they didn't. No, that was the last one they ever made, thank goodness. Why do you think it was a success? It was free. That's right. Anyone else? Say it again. Innovative, a church showing a movie, and a secular movie at that. They took care of people's children, driven by children, value in the community, trying to reach families. Yep.
It wasn't about the activity. They probably trained their people how to reach out.
They taught the people how to reach out. There you go. That was key to it. Yes. Come on. Anything? Yes, at the back. It was fun. Yes. Nobody expected church to be fun. The adults had to come and bring the kids. That's clever, too. Yes. Yes. Keep going. You're doing pretty good. Warmth and kindness. That's always wins. Good. What's that? Nobody asked anything of them. No, and it was a movie that they'd seen or seen had been advertised. Any other one? Yeah.
I believe
the members of the church were involved. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, they got the word out. Absolutely true. Yep. Yeah, go ahead. Yep. Yes. It became a family event, absolutely. And they were trying to reach young families, absolutely right. Any others? And then I'm going to tell you why.
Speaking to the children at their level.
At their level, okay, yeah. With that particular movie, very low level. Yes.
Maybe it's the first time that they meet together.
That's right, there you go, community event, absolutely. Hey, Antonio Banderas, hey. Olé. Okay. Now I want to tell you why it really was a success. And I'll tell you, because what I'm about to tell you is significant, I think. A year before, they decided that they as a church wanted to reach young families. So they said, well, where do young families, the definition means children, where would the children be? School. All right. If we want to reach them, how do we connect with a local secular school? So the pastor of the church went to the principal of the school and said to him, we're so-and-so from the community. Many of our children come to your school. How can we help you? No strings attached. He was shocked because Christians normally come demanding something, books be taken out or whatever. Christians seldom come and say, how can we serve you? In fact, they seem to never do that. He was taken aback. He said, well, as a matter of fact, we have trouble getting volunteers to monitor in recess. We have trouble getting volunteers to monitor when they're having the lunchroom. If you guys could provide volunteers, that would be a help to us. But you're not allowed to preach. No problem. A number of the people from the school, the church, I mean, volunteered, and every week they would go and they'd monitor and walk, and everyone looking at these religious Christian people. But inevitably, somebody, one of the teachers, was going through a divorce, comes up to the Christian and said, you believe in prayer, don't you? I'm going through a tough time. Could you pray for me? Called Salt and Light. I've read that somewhere. This went on week after week, month after month. Every couple of months or so, the pastor would take the principal out for lunch. How are you doing, Bob? Can we help you anymore? A year later, they're showing this movie. And so the pastor goes to Bob, the principal of school, with a stack of flyers and says to the principal, Bob, we're doing a movie for the community. Would you mind helping us advertise it to the families in the school? And Bob said, for you guys, of course. And he personally handed it out to the 2,500 kids who were part of that school. Many of the people that did the recess were part of the church, so they knew them. Relationships. That's how 1,000 people showed up at the movie. They'd earned the right to be heard. And because they were strategic, and we're going to talk about that in a moment, and they were smart enough to know that every event has to connect with the next event. Most churches haven't caught this. This is a brilliant, bordering on genius thing I'm telling you. Most churches don't see what they're doing in light of the big picture. They only see we're doing a hot dog thing for the community on Saturday, and they never connected to the future. And so people come eat the hot dog like they would do when the firemen offer a hot dog thing. And so they never come back to church, never hear the gospel. But when churches are intentional and they make sure that they're offering projects the following week, you're offering something for the kids and you invite them to something next week, and you offer something for marriages the next week and so on, and you tell all the people that attend in many different ways, then the chances of them coming back increases. Not that brilliant, is it? I call it piggybacking. I had a pastor at a church in Calgary who, I was flying through Calgary, said, I want to meet you for coffee. So I happened to have a stopover. I met him for coffee. He said, David, that piggybacking thing, our church had been doing stuff in the community for years. Very little results. We started doing the piggybacking. My church is growing incredibly just from that one thing alone. Price of admission. It's worth your while coming just for that. Aha. Okay. So how do we fuel imagination in ourselves? Well, I think we need to lighten up. That's God's word to me most often. David, you're taking yourself way too seriously. Lighten up. Read widely. Read beyond your normal reading. Try something, reading things you don't normally. I don't know, how to prepare codfish or something. Become curious. Ask questions. Everybody can teach you something if you listen long enough. Change your routine. Go home a different way. Go out to a restaurant. Order something totally different. Take time to think and pray. How's that? Enlarge your circle of friends. Don't drop your old ones, though. But get new people, different interests. Be healthy, run and stuff like that. I don't do that much of that. I wish I did. I mostly drag suitcases and jump to conclusions. Write down your visions and goals. Develop a creative spot, a place. I have a place in my office at home where I just spend time just focusing on God and creativity. And finally, keep passionate. You know, it's so easy to let the fire down. The greatest fire in the world, if you don't stoke it and put new wood on it, dies down. Doesn't matter how good the fire was to start with. If you don't tend it, it always dies down. But the good news is that if there are embers there, it can be relit. And that's what we need to do. We need to relight. So here we go. So imagination has a source. We need to remember that prayer is the best solution because God is creative. He can give us new ideas that we've never dreamt of if we pray and we listen. There are creative people. Get to know who they are and go to them for ideas. There are creative processes. I've just taught you some. There are creative environments where ideas are welcomed, and that's what we want to become. There are creativity can be adaptive or innovative. Adaptive is you take an idea from somewhere else and you tweak it and make it apply here. Or it's a brand new idea. And finally, creativity is not for everyone and not for everything. You don't want to be creative just to be creative. We want to be creative to become more effective for the kingdom. I don't want my dentist to be creative. I don't. You know, I'm going to fill your teeth with chocolate today. As much as I'd like that, I don't think that's a good idea. I'm not very good with dentists. I went into my dentist and I said to the lady, she said, what's your name? I said, Coward. So when it was my turn, she went into the crowded waiting room and said, the dentist will now see the coward. And three people got up with me. God is the God of the new. I love this. You know, Isaiah 43:19. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? Most of the time we don't. Do you not perceive it? I'm making a way in the desert where it looks like there's no hope. God makes new ways. We want to be part of the new ways. In a dry land, God has streams that he wants to bring through the church. New creative ways. We need to hear what they are. And nobody pulls new wine into old wineskins. And the story is not that the wineskin is old. The story is that the wineskin is inflexible. I know people in their 80s that are younger in their thinking than people in their 20s. Yeah, and those are the kind of people I want to be. So, Imagination is spelt R-I-S-K. Jack Lemmon said, failure seldom stops you. What stops you is a fear of failure. Yeah. Here we go. Here's a reminder. Courage is the art of being the only one that knows you are scared to death. I was in Leamington, Ontario, speaking at a very traditional church. Very, very traditional church. Very traditional. I wouldn't say it was boring, but when my foot went to sleep, the rest of my body got envious. But this church actually had lots of young people in it. And I thought, I don't get this. Why would those young people come to a place like this? I found out from the pastor that they had an elders meeting, and they said, we're not reaching young people, and we need to reach young people. And what do young people like? And so somebody said, skate parks. There's no skate park in the area. What if we built the biggest $20,000, $30,000 skate park right here in our property? We have the land. And the elders immediately say, what you're thinking, what about insurance? Isn't that right? Isn't that what were you thinking? That's right. And then they said, what if we don't do it, what future have we got? So they did it. They built a skate park. And now he says, during the week, kids come with a skateboard under one arm and a Bible under the other. And in the summer, we have it open all the time. And the police say that juvenile crime has gone down in the community. And they compliment us for having the skate park. And the kids coming to church and coming to know Christ. I'm not telling you to do a skate park. I'm just trying to make you think of new ways. That's all I'm trying to make you think of. Okay. So, spelt risk. Now we're going to do some practical stuff. I just like that photograph. Okay. I used to look like that. Now I look like that again. When you start off in life, you believe in Santa Claus. Then, as you have children, you become Santa Claus, and ultimately, you look like Santa Claus. Okay. I have a friend called Eric Swanson who wrote a book called The Externally Focused Church. And Eric Swanson discovered, and I think this is great, that everybody has physical needs, emotional needs, spiritual needs, educational needs, social needs, and work-related needs. And this leads us to a wonderful, this is another grid thing I'm helping you, giving you another tool, which I think has got to be one of the most exciting things on the planet since pizza. And you make a grid, and you put on the left all the things I just listed, physical needs, emotional needs, spiritual needs, educational needs, social needs, work-related needs. I suggest you do one of these if you've got a piece of paper. And then at the top, ideas you didn't think of. You know what? This really helps stimulate new ideas. And if you as a church want to target a group, like, I don't know, say, single parents, the secret is not to do what the church traditionally does. We choose one of those and we think we're heroes. The secret is to choose all of them and focus for a year or whatever on that group by doing all of these things. And you will find that the multi-pronged approach will be 100 times more effective than doing a one-time deal. It's called intentionality, is what it's called. And by the way, how many of you did single parents? Two groups, or were you two together? Together, okay, great. But how many of you did, let's see, youth, well, there's a lot of youth people. How many did youth? Youth. You know, if you guys, after I've gone, got together and shared your ideas together with following this grid, you could revolutionize your youth program, because I bet you've got new ideas nobody's ever thought of. And all the ideas are right here. There's a gold mine right here in the pews. And you're it. Isn't that exciting?
Yes.
All right, well, we could have time to go through all the answers, which would take forever, but would be good to do. Or I think I could go on with the presentation. I think I might choose to do that. But, okay. Is there anyone who had one idea they thought was brilliant? Yeah, you did. Go for it, Mary. What did you think? What group were you after?
Youth.
And what was your most brilliant idea? Which category was it under? It was educational. Okay, youth educational. What did you think? What's that?
Tutoring, homework help.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Tutoring homework help. Absolutely excellent. Anyone else have one of those brilliant moments? Ho, ho, ho. Start at the back. Yes. Show it in the church. That is brilliant. I have never heard anyone say that. That's a brand new idea. You see how this works? That is brilliant. Bordering on genius. That is really good. What were the other hands that went up? Or do you just get intimidated? Yes. What was your group?
Prison.
And what was the category it was under?
Emotional.
What was, yeah, good. The children of those, the children outside. Excellent, excellent. Being a, like a dad, whatever, foster dad or whatever it's called. Oh, got it. Sorry, I'm slow. Very good. Yes, yes. Okay. All right, interesting. That's an interesting thought. Okay, I saw some other hands. Yes. Ethnic, okay. Cultural mentoring in which way?
Uh-huh.
Excellent. People that have immigrated a few years before, that would be great. Yes, yes, like peer mentoring, if you will. Excellent. Great idea. That reminds me of a story, which really irrelevant, but I've got the microphone. We were doing this intercultural symposiums across the country because I think it's a big wave that's coming. And it's here, but no church, a lot of church haven't woken up to it. And one gentleman from a Reformed church, Dutch Reformed, said to all of us, actually, he said, we have a Koreans that rent our building, and the Koreans invited us, the leaders of the Dutch church, to come and have dinner with them. And we were sitting there having dinner, and suddenly halfway through the meal, one of our Dutch folk realized that we were eating with forks and knives. And they said to the Koreans, I thought you guys used chopsticks. And the Korean said this, he said, we do use chopsticks. But we're using forks and knives out of respect for you and your culture. I thought that was a real aha moment about respecting other cultures. Not like you try to reach Mexicans, but you only have coffee and donuts. What happened to Mexican food? Or you're having people from different cultures. What about the nursery? Are all the toys white? That's why this sort of thing really, really puts you in a cutting edge all by yourselves, because most people aren't thinking like this. All right. I think you... How many of you enjoyed working with somebody else? It was fun, wasn't it? And productive. So good. I think you've got a ton of ideas here that you could move on with. So I'm going to wrap up in 15. That's what I said I would do. So... I thought I'd give you some ideas that are happening in the country. Does that sound all right? I'm going to start off by talking about this, another way of looking at creativity, and this is a good one. I'm an evangelist, and people are most open to the gospel at transitional moments. If that is the truth, which I know it to be, we need to look, as we're looking to be evangelistic and missional, one of the focuses of being creative should be, how can we do people graduating, coming to here for university or going somewhere else, whatever. People moving into a community, brand new. People having a baby. All of a sudden, their life is totally switched, isn't it? Your life totally turned around, right? What can you do to be there for that mother? Funerals. When people die, people think of eternity. Some people say, well, that's being manipulative. Well, not if you actually believe in hell. Weddings, people coming from different cultures. It's far easier to reach some Muslim here in Vancouver than it is in Islamabad. Okay. And then visibility, invading the community. Getting out there like we talked about. Being a coach at a soccer team. I thought your idea was brilliant, having a showing of the soccer here. Stuff that we could do of that kind. There are seasons when the church... Now, of course, seasons that people would come to church, like Christmas and Easter and stuff like that. Now, those are people who have a Christian frame of reference, which is a decreasing number, but we should try to do things. Just to show you how dumb I am, The first church I pastored, we had some big churches in our area that did big productions with flying angels. Do you know what I'm talking about? Singing Christmas trees or singing something or other. Bushes, maybe. We couldn't even do a singing bush. We didn't have enough talent for a bush. So I was thinking, well, you know, this is a time where people think of church. You know, what could we do? And I thought, well, nobody's doing a manger scene with a live camel. And the elders laughed at me. Oh, you got to be kidding. And I said, no, I think we should do a wise man with a camel. That would be news. And they said to me, foolishly, they said, if you can get a camel, we'll do it. I got a camel. I found a camel that was used in television productions, and we had him come in, and so we did this thing. So now you got to understand, I know nothing about country. I grew up in Buenos Aires, 13 million people, you know, there you go. So here I am, I know nothing about farms. So I knew enough that we needed animals. So I went to all the farms, like the Abbotsford and that type of place, and I asked for people to give me chickens and ducks and donkeys and goats and sheep. And farmers lent me those animals. I'm not telling you to do this. I knew enough to put tarps out, because they could do a deposit on the church. And then I thought, well, we should have something to absorb it. So I thought bales of hay would absorb it. So I bought a bunch of bales of hay. And the person who was helping me said, do we open the bales of hay now or later? I said, well, we don't want people traipsing this through the church during rehearsals, because we got a few people to do solos and people dressed in dressing gowns with the sheep and the wise men and all that stuff. So I said, let's open the bales of hay at the last minute. Well, the last minute, just before the thing was, we advertised in the area, you know, live camel, you know, manger scene, live camel. So then we opened up these bales of hay, and I didn't know that hay has dust in it. So when we opened the bales of hay, literally, the place was filled with dust. And it hangs there. It looked like the Shekinah glory, just hanging there. And the singers came in, you know, going to sing. We gave asthma attacks to half the people that came into the place. I didn't know to put the ducks in a corral. I left them loose. So the, you know, the wise man would come in, and the shepherd would go hawk, and you know, and then the sheep would go beaver. One fell off the platform, fell into the drum set. We called him Ringo. And I had no idea what I was doing. And then the camel finally came in, and I had to literally measure the door and rent a camel that would fit in the church. That's okay. The camel finally comes in, and packed place, by the way. Packed, all these people come to see a stupid camel. And we couldn't put the camel up on the platform because it was just too much. And they're horrible creatures, by the way. And they smell, oh. And so the handler was dressed in a dressing gown, you know, wise man. And so he's holding the camel. The camel's big animal, his rear end aiming at everybody like a bazooka, you know. We had to put the show on a whole bunch of times. We had over 1,000 people come to see a silly show. They would never have come. More people came to see the camel than ever came to hear me speak. And ultimately, when we gave an invitation, some 25 people came to Christ, and it was the beginning of a real breakthrough for the church. All I'm trying to say is that I'm not telling you to do stupid things. I do them too. I've got another one that's even worse than that one, but I'll tell you that later. So, you know, Easter, another point like that. You know, you try to reach university students. We tried something called, well, I called it Eat and Wash. Because when my kids were at Trinity Western University, and I lived in Chilliwack, they'd come in the weekend. They hated using the wash and dry at the university, so they'd bring the washing home. So I thought, well, there must be all the students that go to any university must also have trouble with washing. And they also don't get home-cooked meals. So I said to the older people whose kids had left, I said, would you be willing to host a few young people in the university, and they'll come to your house with their washing. You would do their washing for them while you give them a home-cooked meal with home-baked pie. I said, yes. So I phoned the university, found out they had a radio station, wrote a little thing. I said, would you announce this? Free washing. If they come to a church service on a Sunday, afterward they'll be taken out for lunch and have their washing done. Eat and wash. And the church just took off. We ended up with about 350 kids ultimately. They were coming to do their washing and that. I'm not telling you to do that. I'm just trying to make you think, what are the needs of that particular group? What can we offer? What, you know, that's all I'm trying to make you do. I'm not trying to make you think of doing that particular thing. Another church in Chatham, Ontario, decided that during Halloween, they couldn't do a hallelujah party. Some people do that. So what they did is they volunteered with the police force to go and keep the streets safe. And so the people in the community knew that this church was helping keep the streets safe for their kids. I'm just trying to make you think a little different. That's all I'm trying to make you do. We did a festival, fall festival. We called it a Mexican fiesta. Why Mexican? I have no idea. I just thought Hawaiian didn't sound right. And I thought that having a barbecue was just too plebeian. So I had a friend of mine who's Cuban who had a band. And so we put it in the parking lot of the church. We offered everybody hot dogs, all that usual stuff. And then he sang. He was Cuban, but he sang pretending to be Mexican. So he sang, Cuando salí de Cuba, de que mi vida. And of course, everyone said, oh, what a nice Mexican. And a lot of the people came. We gave out flyers to for the people who did the face painting for the kids. They talked to them about the kids' programs at the church, gave them flyers for the next week for the kids. And you're following what I'm saying, you know, how everything leads to something else. I hope you see calling piggyback. So that a lot of people come back, and there's all sorts of this as a church doing this. Canada Day, there's a church in Langley, CLA, that does a big festival. We did an event, Acts of Kindness. This made it to the cover of the Ottawa Citizen. They were doing free car washes. And, I don't think that this is the best way to do it myself personally. But there are people that do this sort of thing and make a splash in the community, literally. The secret is don't let your young people use wire wool in their car wash. Singing in a nursing home for senior citizens, taking the kids to senior citizens' home, offering free coffee on the highway, offering little plants at springtime, going door to door, we'd like to give you this little thing and talk about the Lord. There's a group here in Vancouver that did something called Beauty Break for prostitutes, and they basically came in, people from the community, you probably know about the program, and they did the hair, washed the hair of these prostitutes and did their nails and did makeup for them and looked after them, pampered them. Okay, just trying to think of things that you could do. This is probably the most significant thing that's ever been done in Canada in my lifetime, and that is churches in Winnipeg, Manitoba, went to the police, and they asked the police chief, they said, how can we as the churches of Winnipeg, Evangelical Church, help you? And the police said, we are known as the murder capital of Canada. We have major gang problems. If you guys could help us take the graffiti off the downtown, that would be a help. Because you see, gangs tag the area. And so the tagging says, this is a crime area, nobody cares, we're in control, get lost. If you could help us take the tagging off, that would be a huge help to us. We'll offer you the paint. The Christians in Winnipeg managed to mobilize over 1,000 volunteers, 1,000, over 3 weekends. And they literally took all the graffiti off the entire city of Winnipeg. I think the next, no, I don't have it. Okay. But they even did overpasses. The mayor of Winnipeg, Jewish, went on national television to say, I want to thank the Evangelical Church in Winnipeg for putting their faith into practice. Influence. We talked about that earlier, didn't we? It all leads to something. Another group, is this helping you at all? I'm just trying to make you think. Another group had a lot of people coming into the area from the Caribbean, and they were often unemployed, so they decided that the churches would offer basketball. They were amazingly capable basketball players. So they all had gyms, at least they did, and so they offered a thing they call hoops. They got the kids off the street, got them got some self-esteem, and helped them in some amazing ways. Collecting trash around the city. This is a group that put up fence for a home for a single mom. The single mom's house falling to pieces, the church went in and just refurbished the whole church for them, the whole place for them. This is a psychic fair. The Christians said, instead of us all complaining about it, why not join them? So they rented a booth. They said, what was the slogan? Let me just remember what the slogan was. They had a very clever slogan. We have a word for you. And people would come in and they'd read the scriptures to them. And people got saved. They got like, I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds came to Christ. Okay, I'm just trying to make you think outside the box. That's what I'm telling you. There's got to be a horse here somewhere, remember? That's the way I think. I hope you remember that the rest of your life. There's got to be a horse here somewhere. Where's a horse? Okay. Here's a group doing car washes. And here's kids in subsidized housing, giving toys by the local church. This is a concert done by Christian artists to raise money. And everybody that came to the concert had to bring food for the local food bank. There's a food for the local food bank. This is a run. Instead of doing a run for a Christian thing, they did a run for the local hospital. A church did it. This is an evangelistic event. I spoke in Prince George. We had about 20,000 people come over 5 days, and we had 550 people come to Christ first time. That's the closing event with 5,000 there. Place in Montreal had drug drop-ins and stuff for getting people off drug recovery programs. This is not Nouvelle-Vie. This is an English-speaking church. So the bottom line is, you know, what are the needs of the community, and how can we be creative in reaching out to a broken and a hurting world? I'm ending where I started with a Good Samaritan story. How can we, as the Church of Jesus Christ, live an influence so that when we die and go to meet Jesus, and finally we look back and we say we've made a difference. Look at the difference in the lives of people that now have hope and a future because our church was there. So, here we go. Ephesians says, "Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all that we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus through all generations, forever and forever. Amen." I close with this. This is my close, and then I'm over. I'm on time, too, David. Please note. Very impressive, isn't it? I wrote a book on humility. There was a lady, I love to tell. So there was a lady who, a single lady, and she read a book, and she got this book, and the book was probably the most boring book she'd ever read in her life. In fact, the book was such a boring book that she didn't bother finishing it. And she got the book, she took it and put it in her bookcase and said, "Forget the book." About a month later, she goes to a party. And in the party, she's there and she looks across the room and there's a young, handsome man. She looks across at that incredible young man. He looks across at her. And it's one of those moments. And it's like love at first sight. And they go outside and they sit in the veranda of the party and start talking. And it's like she's known him all her life. And then as they're talking and falling in love with each other, she asks this young man, "What do you do?" And he says, "I'm an author." "What did you write?" She is smart enough to go, "Oh." That evening, he drops her off at her house. "Have a good night kiss." He drives away. 2 a.m. She goes back and grabs a book. But this time, the book is so well written. The book is so deep. This time, she doesn't realize how she could have missed it. What incredible thought. What depth. What an amazing book. How revolutionary. Oh, what an amazing book. What had happened? It was the same book. The difference is, she had fallen in love with the author of the book. When we fall in love with the author of the book, we will do what it takes to win our world. God bless you. See you Sunday.